Hey everyone, Adela here. Welcome to the very first episode of the Podcast Brunch Club podcast. I'm so excited. Today we'll be talking to Sarah Da Silva from Audible Feast about the listening list she curated for PBC a few months back. The theme she chose was gangs, and you can find that listening list at podcastbrunchclub.com/gangs. But first, for those of you who are not familiar with PBC, it's like book club but for podcasts. We started as a group of 8 podcast fans in Chicago, and we now have in-person groups called chapters in over 25 countries on 4 continents. As thought and emotion-provoking as podcasts are, it's typically a solitary activity. We are trying to change that by starting a community for podcast listeners to engage with fellow fans. Every month, we choose a theme and send out a list of 3 to 5 episodes that are curated by a different PBC friend. We send out the listening list via the PBC newsletter. Sign up for the newsletter so you can get the listening list in advance of the PBC discussion podcast that I'll release around mid-month every month, with a bonus episode here and there if I get enough feedback from the PBC community. Membership in PBC is free and easy. Just go to podcastbrunchclub.com to sign up for the newsletter, find out if we have a chapter where you live, start a chapter where you live if we don't have one there, and learn about how to participate online. Also, go back to episode 0 of this podcast for an intro to PBC and for more details on how to get involved. So for the first episode of the PBC podcast, we're going back a bit into our archives. Back in March of 2017, Sarah Da Silva curated the PBC listening list for the month. Sarah is the wonderful leader of the Houston chapter of Podcast Brunch Club. She is also the founder and editor of Audible Feast. Audible Feast is a podcast review and recommendation website. It features reviews with ratings from 1 to 5 stars in a variety of categories like educational value and humor. Sarah also puts together a playlist each Friday called Delicious Ingredients with the best podcasts she heard all week. To check out other features like a massive index of all of her reviews, interviews with podcast hosts, and network spotlights, go to audiblefeast.com. That's AudibleFeast. The theme that Sarah chose was gangs, so I was happy to chat with her about the listening list she put together for PBC. We'll give a brief overview of the episodes we're discussing in the podcast discussion itself, but if you want to go and listen to the episodes before listening to our discussion, go do that. We'll be here when you get back. You can find the episode list in the show notes or at podcastbrunchclub.com/gangs. Thanks, Sarah, for joining me for the first ever Podcast Brunch Club podcast.
Thanks, Adela. I'm very happy to be here.
So the first question I have for you, Sarah, is how did you come to the theme of gangs?
So actually, Adela provided me with a nice long list of potential topics, and really, I probably could have picked any of them and found some awesome episodes from tons of different podcasts. What stood out to me about the topic of gangs was that I hadn't listened to many episodes about gangs, and I didn't really know of any specific podcasts that dealt with gangs. And I wanted to hear some stories of hope and some positivity of people getting out of gangs and maybe some people that had kind of turned their life around. And just wanted to just get exposed to some new things that I hadn't listened to before. And I thought it would also be a really good discussion topic for the Podcast Brunch Club groups.
Yeah, it absolutely was. So do you want to give a quick overview of the episodes you chose?
Yeah. So the first episode that I chose was from the NPR show Embedded. The episode that I picked was The Capitol, and it is an episode where Kelly McEvers, the host, travels to San Salvador, which is basically a murder capital. There's so much corruption, so many gangs there, It's just an extremely dangerous place to live. And Kelly really became embedded in the culture there and tried to understand what it's like to actually live there. There was some issues going on at the time with the bus system and the gangs kind of saying, like, you know, nobody can ride the bus, and everybody there rides the bus to get everywhere, to go home, to go to work, to do everything. And so it was really disruptive to the city. And it was just like, to me, that was one episode that I had heard before, and I felt like it was so gripping, that it was just a perfect example of something that happens with gangs. The second episode that I chose was actually a documentary, a standalone documentary that was presented by APM Reports, American Public Media, and it was called Gangster Confidential, and it was actually from several years ago. It was about a man who was a former Mexican mafia gang member, and he had spent time in prison, but had kind of tried to, reconcile his actions and kind of had tried to turn over a new leaf. So that was really interesting to me, whether he was being genuine or not. And the third episode was called the Justice, Hope, Freedom podcast. And it was a interview with a guy who had left the gang and had kind of turned his life around and was helping youth to avoid the lifestyle. He was just really fascinating to me. He had been involved in prostitution, and it was just super fascinating and really hopeful story.
Yeah. So as part of every podcast brunch club listening list, we always include a set of conversation starters. And you put together a really nice list. We don't have to go through all of them, but are there any that you want to talk about in particular? I have a couple of favorites myself, but.
Some of the things that I really wanted to talk to my own particular podcast brunch club about were, do you think that people can really be rehabilitated when they're in part of a gang? Most people were kind of, everybody kind of had the same reaction. Like, it's like, you kind of take this like deep breath in and you're like, I don't know, yeah. You know, you want to say yes. But it's just this for many people, it's just a lifelong struggle to kind of break away. And it's just, there's so many advantages to staying in the gang, or that's what people are led to believe. So that was a good one to talk about.
That was one of my favorite questions to explore too. And it's funny because it actually relates to one of our other listening lists from a previous month when we did prison, and whether or not, you know, talking about whether or not people who commit these horrific crimes can truly be rehabilitated, and what is the purpose of prison? Is it rehabilitation, or is it just justice? But I mean, your episodes, the three that you chose, two of them featured rehabilitated gang members. So, yeah, I mean, you said in the beginning that you wanted to see kind of the other side of it, somebody come through it on the other end. But I think you bring up a really good point, because I really think that there's an element of community that gangs provide that, I'm not a gang member. I've never been a gang member. I really don't know any gang members, but I would imagine there's like that sense of community that maybe people don't have to begin with. Maybe they're not, you know, they don't come from a stable home. Although the guy in the APM reports, Renee, I forget his last name, mm-hmm. but it seemed like he came from a really well-off family, and actually was he was very well-spoken. I was kind of surprised to hear him speak. But there's an element of community that they cultivate, and I can see how it can easily draw people who might not have that as a part of their normal lives and normal family lives. and how that could be very attractive. You know, we all belong to the human race, but like you still have to subdivide. You have to find your tribe, and that's maybe that's their tribe.
Yeah, and I think kind of going along with that is one of the other things that I brought up as a question was about this, like, the hierarchy in this elite warrior mm-hmm. training, this, like, idea of, so this is your community that you identify with, and then there are, like, levels that you can achieve in this community. So it's a way to, like, feel like you're doing something, you're succeeding in something. So it's fulfilling this need, this other need that people have. So they're part of a community, like you said, but then they're also like, they're succeeding at something, achieving something. And there's like multiple ways to do that. And they're all destructive to society, mm-hmm. but I can see why it would, you know, give someone a home and a place to, you know, a place to want to be. Like, I can understand wanting to, you want to please people. A lot of people do. Yeah. So, I that's a very, effective tactic mm-hmm. from gang leadership.
And there seems to be like this loyalty that exists.
Yeah.
This uber loyalty that exists that you would do anything for the gang. I can see how there's comfort in that if you've grown up in maybe what is a bit more chaotic. And there's actually a really good book called Gang Leader for a Day. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Oh my gosh, it's such a good book. And so I'm forgetting probably a lot of the details, and I might not give the best synopsis, but this is what I remember. And, you know, caveat that my memory usually stinks. But it was based in Chicago, that I know for sure. It was out of the University of Chicago, and this it was a researcher. It's sort of centered on this researcher who was maybe getting his PhD or maybe his master's, and this was back in the 80s, back when the crack epidemic was crazy and the war on drugs and this and that. And University of Chicago is in Hyde Park, and it was right up against the Robert Taylor Homes, which is a really well-known set of, I forget the term, but it was Section 8 housing, mm-hmm. had a lot of issues, and they've subsequently been torn down, but like they were notorious for just horrific violence and just very poor people. And this naive dude who was at the University of Chicago getting his PhD and studying, I don't know what he was studying, economics or sociology or something like that. He decides that he's going to go and research the people in the Robert Taylor housing project. And he goes in armed with like paper surveys. And it was like, one of the questions was like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how does it feel to be poor and black?
Oh, no.
And of course, immediately people just did not take to it. And mm-hmm. in fact, the researcher himself was, I think he was Indian, but he had just spent the summer following the Grateful Dead around and had like dreadlocks. And so the people in the housing project thought he was in the Latin gangs. And so they were convinced he was just trying to infiltrate or whatever. They actually held him hostage on one of the landings in the Robert Taylor Homes. And he spent the night trying to convince them, like, no, I'm just a researcher. I'm just a student. I'm just a student. And eventually the mm-hmm. gang leader came and had a little bit of an ego. And when he finally kind of came around and said, okay, yeah, I think you really are a grad student, he, in talking to him, the gang leader eventually said, all right, you want to learn about the gangs? Why don't you follow me around? And I'll give you like unfettered access. You can go with me to all these things. And then he literally followed this guy around for like 10 years.
Wow.
And wrote this book. And there's actually That's a chapter so cool. in Freakonomics about the finances of a gang. And it came from this guy's research.
Yeah, I remember yeah. that. Yep.
And it's super interesting because, you know, you're kind of led to believe it's just a bunch of thugs who don't know what they're doing. And they're uneducated. There's no rhyme or reason for anything. But actually, what, at least after I read the book, I came away thinking, well, no, it's actually really organized. There's a very strict set of rules. There's justice. It might be street justice, but it's justice. There's a whole thing. And this guy, the gang leader, actually had a college degree. And he graduated in the 80s in Chicago and was having a hard time, you know, finding a normal job, and decided, you know, selling drugs is more lucrative. And he was on the streets. It was a fascinating book.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. But so going back to the question, what do you think? Can gang members truly be rehabilitated?
I mean, I'm a glass half full person, so I like to say yes. I think there are examples of, well, I think the best examples are when you see or you hear stories of people who, like in the third podcast with Raymond Grant, where he talked about becoming an advocate, kind of flipping the script. And mm-hmm. I think that's what you probably hear about the most, is people that have said, you know, this made such an impact on my life that I want to impact other people's lives so that they don't go down this path. I do think it's possible. You know, obviously the person has to believe in it and want it. And there has to be the support for that person. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know any research or statistics, but I'm sure, you know, given the overcrowding of the prison population, I'm sure that a lot of gang members are written off from society. If you're a criminal, then, you know, you're just lost to society. And, so that would be really discouraging. And so there's not a lot of incentive to change your life.
It's true. I mean, we talked about that at our meeting, about how even though they may have paid their debt to society, like their debt is never over because they always have to check that box on an application, right? Like, have you ever been convicted of a felony? They are always mm-hmm. going to have to check that box. So it's going to follow them around for the rest of their lives. So even if there was, even if the purpose of the prison system was to rehabilitate and it did its job, like it's not giving people a second chance. It's not like releasing them into regular society and being like, okay, now take everything that you learned and apply it, because they're kind of taking them a couple of notches down before they put them out. But at the same time, I feel strange about the idea that the person sitting next to me may have killed a person mm-hmm. or raped a woman or done whatever it is that they did to get into prison in the first place. Right. And I don't know. It's a really tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And you hear stories all the time of people that were let out early and then went immediately to commit another violent crime. Right. And not all gang members commit violent crimes, But it's a tough, I don't know. How do you measure rehabilitation? How do you know? And what are the tactics? And I mean, this was why it was a good discussion question, because, you know, I don't think anybody really has the answer of how do you help people, and reduce your recidivism mm-hmm. rate? Especially within the gang member population. It's really tough.
Easy to just go back to it. If that's your only way of making money and nobody will hire you, what else are you supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. My group also talked quite a bit about what was going on in El Salvador. Number one, we talked about how scary it would be to be Kelly McEvers. She has kids, or at least one kid, I think. And I heard her interviewed on The Longest Shortest Time, and she talked about it. She was, Hillary Frank asked her, oh my gosh, were you freaking out about being in this like total war zone, even scarier than a war zone, and thinking about your kids at home? And, she said, no, this is what I signed up for. This is what I love to do. This is the job that I have. I've always had jobs like this. I've done other foreign correspondence, and it's been scary too. Mm-hmm. I just cannot I cannot imagine it being any parent, not necessarily a mother, but just, you know, being a parent and just fearing, I'm sure fearing for your life in a war zone like that is incredibly scary.
But imagine being one of the people who lives there on a day-to-day basis. It's even crazier to think. And it's so hard because you're thinking, okay, there's this, I don't know, this level of detachment I think people feel when they hear these stories, because they're like, those people aren't like me. I don't live in that country. They speak a language I don't speak. And so, yeah, of course, a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Kelly McEvers, who you do feel a little bit more of a connection to, because you, I actually went and saw her at a, she did a little lecture about her recording of the HIV outbreak in Indiana. But it's sort of easy to put up that wall and detach yourself from what's happening there. But then I'm starting, okay, I always try to say, okay, I'm thinking about my place where I live right now. Imagine, okay, I take a bus to work. I can imagine my bus stop. Imagine, you know, gang members just crowding the bus stops, or imagine witnessing or being on one of those city buses that I take downtown and being on a city bus and having my bus driver just shot randomly. Or like, imagine people marching down my street and just anarchy. It's easy to imagine it when you're thinking about it almost like a movie. It's happening in this unfamiliar place with these unfamiliar people in this unfamiliar setting. But if you try to kind of think about it in terms of your own environment and kind of put your own, layer your own context on top of the story, it becomes so much scarier. Because I kept thinking to myself, like, this guy is staying there. He knows how dangerous it is. He's got kids. And I think the whole thing started, the whole podcast started by her pointing out that she was going there because so many people were illegally immigrating to the United States because of the gang violence, because they kept hearing, why are you here? Gangs in El Salvador. Why are you here? Gangs in El Salvador. And so many children, unaccompanied minors, were coming. And so it was one of those things where it was almost an exploration into that. Like, why are you coming across the border? Could you imagine? You have two sons. Could you imagine? You have like a three-year-old, right?
Scary. Like,
yeah, it's crazy. Give your six-year-old and your three-year-old a backpack full of water and send them into the desert.
Yep. Send them on their way. Yep.
It's crazy. Yep. Like, and you just don't know what you would do in those kinds of situations. It's easy to be like, oh, I would leave. I would just leave. I would just pack up and leave. But if you don't have anywhere to go and you would have to, you know, cross a desert by foot and maybe deal with, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah. I liked that she also talked to the, and she gave so much credit to the journalists there that had hooked her up with these stories and these people, and that were, I mean, she just kept saying over and over, like, these are the people who are so brave to share the stories. Like, that is a big part of the gangs. They don't, they want to use the media in a certain way, but like not the way that the journalists are telling the story. And so those local journalists to put themselves in the line of fire to educate people and just get some of that word out, because, you know, if the bus system is shut down and, you know, your loved one is in the city center and you're waiting to hear from them, how are you going to find out other than if journalists, you know, make those connections and put the dots together to tell the story of what is going on, like real time, which they were doing. It was
And amazing. I think about the one time in my life that I ever felt that kind of chaos, and it was on September 11th. And so imagine having a September 11th every day for weeks on end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just unfathomable. Like, what would you do?
Yeah.
How would you survive when it's just complete chaos? You don't know who's in charge. You don't know what's happening.
Yeah, and then that becomes more the norm for you, is this like total chaos. And then how do you adjust to any other, say you are able to, you know, flee to somewhere safer, how in the world, like, do you adjust as a refugee to a different lifestyle. Oh my gosh. Like there's so many implications of what a gang can do when it can completely take over and control a city. Like that's very, very scary.
Yeah. Did you hear Kelly McGovern's, I actually thought when you told me that you were picking an embedded episode, did you hear her coverage of the biker gang? I think it was in Texas, yes. Right?
Yes. Waco. Yeah. Yep.
Where that huge brawl happened.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I don't remember too much about that episode now, but yes, I listened to all of those embedded episodes. They were so good.
Yeah. Gangs are an interesting thing. I actually grew up in an area where, I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, so it's not, you know, super dangerous, but my high school didn't have the best reputation, and there was some gang activities. We actually had a couple of shootings and some, like, just weird stuff happening, but yeah, like, I can't, it's something that people get involved with when they're so young before they really even know what the world is and what the world has to offer. And then once you're in it, it's really hard to get out of.
Yeah. And you hear all the time, like no parent that is in a gang wants that for their kid, but it just becomes.
To me though, it sounded like the mom of, okay, you're going to have to remind me of his name. The one from Hope Freedom.
Raymond Grant.
His mother seemed to like, want him to be involved in all that stuff. She was showing him guns. She didn't, tear him away from a dead body in the street. She, you know, showed him how to run drugs. That's completely crazy to me.
Yeah, that's messed up. Yeah.
So what characteristics would allow a leader to rise to power in a gang? And I actually think it's major smarts. It's like being a CEO of a company. Yeah. You have to know politics, mm-hmm. You have to know business, you have to know strategy, you have to know, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of emotional tactics that are also used, fear, but loyalty and all these emotional things that are caught up in it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I would say probably a CEO is a very good comparison. There's a lot of things moving at one time. You know, you have to really think about who you trust and but you have to delegate many things. Mm-hmm. So
there's organization.
Yeah, there's logistical things. Yeah.
I mean, it's called organized crime, right? But I guess I don't often think of gangs, like street gangs, as being like organized crime, even though, I know they are. But I think of organized crime as being mafia and, for some reason, there's like a distinction there in my head, which I don't know why. Yeah. It doesn't seem like there should be. Now that I know more about it, it is similar. Like extortion, fear, hierarchy, loyalty. And it's interesting, but I guess unsurprising, that it's mainly delineated by racial demarcation.
Yeah, I would say, well, as you were saying that, like, I had never thought about that before, but I would say, I would guess that that's probably one of the reasons why, is that I think gangs are affiliated with people who are non-white, and predominantly, and organized crime is the term that you use for people who are in a gang that are white, and that's a interesting.
I never thought about that. That's really interesting. Although there are gangs, like he was talking about, Renee was talking about when he went to that rehabilitation center for people who've kind of dropped out of the gang and were now government mm-hmm. informants.
Yeah.
How he sort of became friends with the guy from the Aryan gang, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just that whole white power kind of.
Yeah.
And that's definitely along racial lines. But I guess the difference is that the mafia is not as much racial as, I guess it's national, right? It's
mm-hmm.
Italian.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's a really interesting
thing to think about. And it seemed like I learned that prison is something that a lot of gang members almost aspire to. It's not something that they're afraid of. It's something that they almost know that they know they're going to go. They want to go. And there's some sort of like learning process that happens while they're there, or maybe even more integration into the gangs, because a lot of the gangs are run from prison or through prison or something. There's a huge prison element to the gang organization, which is also fascinating because it so defeats the purpose, doesn't it? You're trying to lock these people away so that they don't have access to do all these things, but it's almost like they have more access because they can just sit around. Like that whole idea of what was he talked about, Renee talked about the thousand ideas meetings where they would just throw out ideas. It didn't matter how stupid they were. They'd just sit in a circle and they'd throw out ideas and just trying to find ways to make money on the streets. And they just, all they have is time. So let's brainstorm ways to,
you know, how the prisons are able to deal with that is really totally unsuccessful. You know, like they can't, they don't have a lot of, the way that the prison system is set up, I guess, is just that there's so few levers they can pull. There's punishment. That's the thing that they can offer more of is punishment. And that's not a deterrent at all. For a lot of people and gangs. So like you said, it's like a badge of honor. Like, oh, they sent me to solitary. Like, great.
It was also interesting how he talked about solitary. The whole mental jogging thing that he did, where he would imagine going through places that he was familiar with while he was just running around in a circle like a rat on a wheel. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. That's, brilliant. He was impressive. What was the end of his story, Renee's story?
Let's see. The last thing, Governor Jerry Brown again denies parole for ex-Mexican mafia killer Renee Enriquez. So that was in June of last year. But the podcast was from 2008. So that was like, a long time prior to that. But it sounds like from the article that... he had been up for parole a couple of times and they had said no each time. So I thought that was like I loved that episode for that reason also, because it was from so long ago. And there was an update on what had happened with him. So I thought that was kind of cool. Like there was, you know, little something to look up on your own later. That was was cool.
He was, okay, so I'm reading it now, and it says he has been convicted of gang rape, 2 killings, and a jailhouse stabbing. Yeah, I don't know if I want that guy on the streets. I don't care how much information he's passed to law enforcement.
Right. Yeah, and it says in this article, it's saying that he did the killings while he was on parole a previous time, so... So probably not a good candidate for parole.
Well, I think this is a good place to wrap it up. So thank you so much for being my first guest. I hope that the audio quality works out and it's not too fuzzy for everybody, but I hope they bear with me as I figure out the technology. Thanks for being my first guinea pig, Sarah.
Sure, of course, anytime.
So that wraps it up. I hope you enjoyed Sarah and my discussion about the gang's listening list. Of course, we only scratched the surface. As always, I want feedback, so if you have suggestions or constructive criticism, get in touch. You can email me at Adela, that's A-D-E-L-A, at podcastbrunchclub.com. And I'm on Twitter at podcastbrunch. Definitely subscribe to the newsletter and join our Facebook group, which you can find a link to on the website. One quick end note. Podcast Brunch Club is my passion project. I love every single minute of it, but it has quickly become quite the undertaking. If you are interested in supporting what I'm trying to do with PBC, which is basically to build a global community, please visit patreon.com/podcastbrunchclub. Patreon is spelled P-A-T reon.com/podcastbrunchclub. There you can also read about my future plans for PBC, like how I'd like to expand PBC to schools, libraries, and senior living facilities. If you would like to sponsor PBC, visit podcastbrunchclub.com/sponsors. Thanks and happy listening!